Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Eric Nielsen, and I represent Mr. Ackley. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may, please. The issue today is whether Mr. Ackley was entitled to have the jury instructed on his self-defense theory. The basic premise for self-defense and whether one's entitled to an instruction on self-defense is that a court is only justified in preventing a jury from considering a self-defense claim if there is no credible evidence to support that claim. Now here, because there was some evidence to support Ackley's theory, the jury should have been instructed on that theory. And it wasn't, and so his conviction should be reversed. The court denied submitting Ackley's self-defense claim to the jury for two reasons. One, it concluded that it was unreasonable for Ackley to believe he needed to protect himself from O'Connor. And the second reason it concluded was based on Ackley's testimony itself, that he did not commit an assault, therefore, as a matter of law, he was not entitled to claim self-defense. These two conclusions were a result of the court's misinterpretation of the law. And I will discuss each in turn. As far as the objectively reasonable standard that the court found, it did not believe that Ackley presented enough evidence to show that there was a need to protect himself from O'Connor when O'Connor pulled up his shirt. However, the problem with that analysis that the court made was that Ackley was entitled to a self-defense claim if there was any evidence viewed in a light most favorable to him from his standpoint, standing in his shoes and knowing what he knew and what he saw, that he had subjectively feared that he was in imminent danger of bodily harm, and his belief was objectively reasonable.
Does subjective fear factors into the reasonableness test?
Well, not really, no. The subjective fear is, that's the reasonable test is what prevents somebody from coming into court and saying, Your Honor, I look at you, I pull out a gun and say, oh, gee, I thought you were going to shoot me, so I had to protect myself. The objectively reasonable standard is, okay, so subjectively, I think that I need to protect myself from whatever is going on. And then we look at that from his standpoint, from his point of view, from his perspective, determine whether that was in a reasonable response.
His explanation about why he thought pulling up his shirt meant he was going to get shot seems a little skinny.
Well, there's two things that are going on here. First, as the court well knows, he testified because he indicated that he grew up in Los Angeles, it was a dangerous city, and that was what led him to believe that O'Connor was going for a gun. But there's also the undisputed...
Let me ask a question. Does the L.A. standard apply in Skagit County?
Well, we're again looking at it from his perspective.
But a reasonable person, the people on the street in L.A., do they behave in wherever he grew up, behave the same way as the people in Skagit County?
They may or may not, but the question is, I don't think that is the question. I think the question is, when you look at it from his perspective, what is his belief? What is his subjective belief?
No, we've already established it isn't his subjective belief for the reasonable test. It's a person with the information he has, whether any reasonable person in Skagit County would believe that he was in peril there when someone lifts up their shirt.
Well, I think, and let me go on here, because I think that one, I don't think it's, you'd look at a reasonable person living in Skagit County,
so
Seattle.
The same standard no matter where you are, whether you're in the mean streets of Chicago this year or in downtown Mount Vernon?
I think it is the same standard. I think it's that because you're looking at that standard.
Do you have a case that says
from
it's
his
a national
point of view.
Standard?
No, I don't have a case that says that, but there's no case that says otherwise either. But the other factor in this is
let me ask you a question about that. In evaluating what's reasonable, does locale play a role?
I don't know that it does play a role. I don't know that why it would play a role. But there's another reason that plays into this as well, and that is we know there's undisputed testimony that there was hostility and there was animosity between Mr. O'Connor and Mr. Ackley. And that hostility, of course, was based on the fact that Mr. O'Connor had revealed this affair that his wife had, and that caused them to have these conversations and discussions, and that there was, and O'Connor admitted that there was hostility and animosity between the two. And in fact, given that animosity and that hostility, even O'Connor's wife testified that when Ackley put his hand in his pocket, she believed that he was going for a gun, which is basically the same thing that Ackley testified that when O'Connor reached down to his waist, lifted up his shirt, he believed that O'Connor was going for a gun. And that is why he did what he did. That evidence alone was sufficient for Ackley to have presented enough evidence to meet his low burden to prove or to at least have that have the jury instructed on his theory of his defense, which was self-defense. But there was more. Ackley had proffered evidence that about a month and a half earlier, there was a conversation he had with O'Connor, and O'Connor threatened him during that conversation. And at about that same time, O'Connor left a voicemail message. That message indicated that O'Connor was out of town, but that he was coming back, and that he told Ackley that he was not going to have somebody else do his dirty work, and that he was going to fix Ackley's mouth. So what we have here is not just the fact that O'Connor lifted up his shirt and Ackley believed that he's going for a gun, but you have to couple that with the hostility and the animosity that the two had towards each other, the conversation that they had earlier, and the voicemail message that was left on Ackley's phone.
Before you're completely out of time, is Al Shire dormant, dead?
Well, but I don't think so. I think because Al Shire, that was a case where the defendant claimed that he didn't even strike the victim in that case. I mean, and that's sort of what the Bay case is about as well. But that's not what we have here. We don't have somebody who's claiming, I didn't commit an assault. I didn't strike the victim at all. However, I'm entitled to a self-defense instruction.
Thank you. You've got 3 minutes.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Eric Peterson from the Skagit County Prosecutor's Office. And the state's position is that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in denying the self-defense instruction in this case. Now, we have to review the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant in evaluating self-defense, and there has to be some evidence supporting the claim of self-defense, so we acknowledge that. But what we have here, and it's found by Judge Cook, there were two separate bases to exclude the self-defense claim. One is that Ackley himself denied what his act amounted to an assault. He claimed that he pulled out the knife and held it on his side, and he clicked it out, but he made no statements that he was taking any act towards Mr. O'Connor at the time that he pulled the knife out. He just pulled his knife out and held it at the side. That's why we have a case where basically two different theories of the case. One is he came at me with a knife saying, I'm going to slice you, I'm going to slice you. And the other one, the defendant saying, I saw him tug some at his shirt, and I picked the knife at my side, and then I saw that he didn't do anything after tugging his shirt, so I threw the knife away. But he never came at him with a knife. There was no assault with a knife.
You're relying on Al Shire as the basis for saying he can't take those inconsistent positions?
Oh, you can take inconsistent positions and allow to a defense, but not when they're just absolutely contrary, when his claim is, I was not, I didn't do an act.
Is Al Shire your authority for that view of the law?
I believe Al Shire is adequate authority for that. Now, defense provided you the case of Warner, a recent Supreme Court decision involving a situation where there were pit bulls around a defendant when he pulled a gun to try to scare the dogs away. And then the defendant, the person who was with the dogs, didn't call off, according to the defense, didn't call off the dogs, and defendant then went to call 911, he says, and instead of calling 911, he accidentally discharged a gun into the ground. And the claim there was accident as opposed to intentional act of threatening with the gun. Well, the Supreme Court said, well, in that circumstance, the theories are not inconsistent, but what you had there was an act of the victim in that case, alleged victim, where he was doing an aggressive act along with the dogs toward the defendant. The defendant did not describe any aggressive acts by Mr. O'Connor towards him. And again, we have to view this from the evaluation from the defense perspective. Now, it's a tricky thing for me as a prosecutor to say, stand up here and provide you facts about what the defendant did, because by doing so, I'm naturally going to be skewing those in a way that the prosecutor would want to have them viewed by a jury. But the defendant had aware that there was animosity between him, he and Mr. O'Connor. He acknowledged seeing Mr. O'Connor on the street, making the swear word and saying some things to Mr. O'Connor as he drove by. And again, I'm trying to be as neutral as possible in the description. The defendant acknowledged driving his car quickly across the road in front and across and parked perpendicular to the roadway. Now, this is a location adjacent to a park where he's driving, when Mr. O'Connor and his wife are walking down the street hand in on the sidewalk hand in hand, when Mr. Ackley does this act. Then if it gets out of his vehicle and having taken the aggressive act. Now, these are the things that are in the defense's mind, knowing that there's some animosity between he and Mr. O'Connor. But there's no indication that there was ever an incident where there have been physical acts between the two. So that's in the defendant's mind, and somehow he takes this as a threatening act by Mr. O'Connor, justifying his use of self-defense. But he immediately, after the knife gets pulled out and seeing that Mr. O'Connor is doing nothing more than grabbing his shirt, puts the knife away. It's entirely inconsistent with the description of the event by Mr. O'Connor, corroborated somewhat by his wife, who's with him. She didn't see all the knife waving or the knife coming out because she backed out of the location rather quickly. But looking at the situation from Mr. Ackley's perspective, what did he know at the time about whether or not Mr. O'Connor was a threat to him? And objectively, you can look at this at the location where this incident occurred. I mean, when you're questioning counsel about the fact that in this location, you're not a threat to me. I don't perceive that. We know this is an area where that's not likely. There's nothing about this location that Mr. Ackley described that would cause him to bring back some thoughts about L.A. that would cause this particular response. So there is both the subjective and the objective view of this. And I get back to Judge.
Let me just ask you it this way. Is it your theory of this case that the evidence that was missing was evidence that this defendant ever formed a reasonable belief that a use of force that otherwise would be unlawful was necessary?
Yes, that's...
I mean, that, in a nutshell, it comes down to that. Whether there's evidence of that fact.
Yeah, and a function of that is the fact that what he did, as his description is, was not an act which was showing that he felt the need to...
Well, what he did might be important in terms of the objective standard for people from the outside looking in. But I'm just trying to narrow down. What is this case about? And it seems to me that this case is about whether there was evidence that the defendant himself ever formed the subjective belief that that a use of force that would otherwise be unlawful was necessary. And you've agreed with me that that's what it comes down to.
I agree with you that what's come down to. And you look at what Judge Cook, when we were addressing this issue before the trial court, what she questioned defense counsel about. What your client is testifying in support of his self-defense theory is that he had the knife in his hand, he held it down at his side, he made no threats to Mr. O'Connor. So what I'm asking is, where is the use of force? Assuming the jury finds your client to be truthful. The next page, this is at page 92, starting at page 92 and 93.
Well, there is evidence of a use of force, the waving of the knife. It doesn't come from him, but it comes from somebody else.
I can make sure I'm not following.
Well, there's testimony that he waved a knife.
Well, that's
not
Mr.
That he,
O'Connor. I guess on my position, you can't meld the victim's description of the event which is he was threatening me with a knife. He was coming at me with and making statements.
See, now you've adopted another theory of the case, and one that I'm not certain that I agree with. He is entitled to the benefit of whatever evidence it is, wherever it comes from. So if somebody else says he didn't have the knife down by his side, he was waving it, it doesn't matter whether it's the other person in the dispute or the gas station attendant who was just watching the two of them whose attention was attracted because the guy parked perpendicular in the street. He's entitled to benefit of whatever it is. So there's evidence that he did that. What there isn't, it seems to me you're arguing, is there isn't any evidence that he formed a subjective belief that any use of force was required.
Well, and that's
nobody testifies to his subjective belief. He doesn't say it, and nobody else can say it.
And that goes on to defense questioning of Mr. Ackley on the 4th of August of 2015 at page 127. Pulling out the knife was your reaction to what? To Mr. O'Connor pulling up his shirt. Question, why did Mr. O'Connor pulling up his shirt make you react by pulling a knife? I've been in some dangerous situation in my life, and that spoke to me of a weapon. So that was the sole acts that he described was said triggered that. But in that
sense, I understand that. I understand that. But what he describes is that caused him such subjective alarm that he engaged in behavior that would not otherwise have been unlawful. There's nothing wrong in Skagit County with taking out a knife and putting it by your side.
Right. And
right?
In fact, there's no act of
that goes to his state of mind as to what he felt was necessary. That doesn't counter someone else's testimony about what he actually did with the knife.
But going back to Aylshire, if you have two entirely denialists having committed the act and a statement that, you know, he did these acts amounting to the offense, they're two inconsistent offenses, and you're not entitled to meld the description of Mr. O'Connor with what...
What was missing in Aylshire was any evidence of the subjective belief of the defendant that a use of force that otherwise would have been unlawful was made necessary, because he denied that he did it at all.
The state's response in this case, objectively, that was not reasonable, given Judge Cook's ruling on that fact.
Thank you.
What is the evidence of his subjective belief that it was necessary for him to use force that otherwise would have been unlawful force?
I think his subjective belief is based on, well, we know what it was testified to. We know that he subjectively believed that he needed to use force because he thought that...
But not unlawful, not force that whether would have been otherwise unlawful force.
Well,
there's nothing unlawful in Skagit County about taking out a knife and putting it at your side.
Yes, but he took out the knife, put it aside. But we also have testimony that he took out the knife, clicked it open, and waved it at Mr. O'Connor.
There's no evidence that he felt that that was necessary.
Well, it does. Well,
that he reasoned that he subjectively felt that that was necessary. Where's the evidence that he felt the need to use force that was unlawful force, otherwise unlawful force?
And I think that goes to the problem that the court failed to analyze all the evidence as it should have. When it first ruled that there's no assault here because he's just taking out the knife and holding it down by his leg, the court then rules all this other evidence that you have, this evidence of a threat, this evidence that he left this phone message. I'm going to let you talk about the fact that there's animosity, because that was the gravamen of what happened here. That's why they had this confrontation. But I'm not going to let you talk about any of this other evidence that would show that his belief that it was necessary for him to do that.
Are you arguing that the fact that some evidence was presented of him waving the knife is evidence that he subjectively decided that was necessary to protect himself?
Yes. Yes. And he's entitled to that evidence.
So simply the evidence of the act of the use of unlawful force is also evidence of a subjective belief?
Yeah, well, I think that's what Callahan tells us. You look at Callahan, There, the defendant admitted he pulled out the gun because he believed he was going to be assaulted. You know, very similar to Ackley's belief.
But Ackley didn't say, I waved the knife because I thought I was going to be attacked. Ackley says, I held the knife at my side, and that's as much as we know about what was going on inside his head.
That's right, because he held the knife by side, just like in Callahan, where we have
You're saying I felt the need to take an action that, in the absence of self-defense, would not be an unlawful use of force.
Well, because Ackley testified that he believed that Mr. O'Connor was going to go for the gun.
Right.
So he was preventing
himself. He also could have run away. He didn't have a duty to, but he could have run away. That wouldn't be self-defense either.
Sure, he could have run away, but he didn't run away.
No, he stood there with a knife at his side. His testimony as to his mental processes is that's what he felt was necessary, to stand there with a knife at his side.
Yes, and then we also have the evidence that he waved the knife at O'Connor.
No evidence that he felt a need to do that.
Yep, I think the evidence, the fact that he felt that he was going to be shot, the fact that he felt that Mr. O'Connor was going for the gun, coupled with the evidence that there was this animosity between the two, coupled with the evidence that he was threatened. Okay, thank you.